Thank you very much for that introduction. Can you hear me at the back there? Can you put up your hand if you can't hear me? No? Okay. I'll take it then. So my paper is Where Learning Takes Place, a phenomenological description of Lev Vygotsky's zone of proximal development. I like long titles, so there's one. So anyone studying teaching practice and pedagogy in recent years will have heard of Lev Vygotsky. He's a Marxist theorist of social constructivism, and his trademark idea, the zone of proximal development, or ZPD, so I'll be calling it ZPD several times. Vygotsky describes this zone as the distance between the actual development level as determined by independent problem solving and the level of potential development as determined through problem solving in collaboration with more capable peers. So this is the text I'm mostly using. He doesn't mention the ZPD very directly except in this text, but it's become extremely influential, which I'll talk about. So the learner can do unaided, and then we have this zone of proximal development. The learner can do with guidance, and outside that is the learner cannot do. Are people familiar with this? Oh, good. Good, good, good. At least I'll be telling someone something. The zone of proximal development then is more often than not described primarily in terms of what's called cognitive constructivism, so the building of ability, the development. Thus, remaining in territory similar to that mapped out by Piaget. More of us have probably heard of Piaget. He features in phenomenological literature quite extensively. This paper will apply a phenomenological descriptive method to contemporary classroom environments influenced by Vygotsky's social constructivism in order to bring to light more concrete, lived versions of this zone of proximal development. By examining this very significant pedagogical approach in terms of a phenomenology of space, place, and dwelling, it is hoped that some value and insight can be brought to the field of teaching practice and the phenomenology of education. Now, I'm not going to do all of that in 20 minutes. So, how are we going to do it? So here I mean we, not the royal we, meaning me, but us here together. So I'm really, really glad that Ingrid already broke into the classroom participation model that everyone loves. I know everyone loves that when you have to participate. I mean when you want to participate. So let's imagine this was a classroom. So actually the quote from Heidegger I was hoping you'd read out about the walls, unless you're bored. So we're in a space now. We are. That's self-evidence, really, isn't it? So if we imagine this is a classroom, for all of us here, that shouldn't be hard. We work in classrooms. We've been in classrooms, some of us, for way too long. We can pretend, you know, that there are teachers and students, let's say, and think about what we've just been talking about, which is the experience of education, how we experience education. So by doing this, we start in familiar territory, and we can then hopefully move into the unfamiliar as we progress deeper into the description of Vygotsky's ZPD. So just bear in mind from the outset that I'm using these terms familiar and unfamiliar, and they come from the same root, which is family or the household. So we have our family or the household, Christmas, you know, which is nice, isn't it? It's nice. It's not always nice. Sometimes it's less nice. But the way that I'm positing it is that the family is closest and constant. Okay, closest and constant. So that's way too sweet. Everyone goes, that's a bit saccharine. I don't like that. So let's try always already. Always already. That's a phrase we're probably familiar with. Okay, so that's familiar. So do you see where I'm going? Familiar and unfamiliar. They bear a striking resemblance to this. This is getting a bit, I'll just put the slide up, it's easier. So they bear a striking resemblance to the Heimlich and the unheimlich. So let's try. Who knows something about this? Put your hand up. Who wants to say something about this? Dave does, good. Good man. Yeah. Well, what I'll do is just have a quick think for about 15 seconds. This is like a magic trick. And then tell us something about
going back to a bit of Freud, yeah. Thinking about this idea of the unheimlich and the way in which that you kind of get a distancing, doppelgangers, a distancing from the world, the unfamiliar, that kind of like boots you back out, but allows you to think and engage with the world as well,
yeah.
at the same time.
Yeah.
That what's on Heimlich can lead to thought, if you like. Yeah.
And does anyone have the Heimlich on Heimlich, the literal? So the uncanny is what you're talking about, and the literal German is the...
The unhomely.
The homely and the unhomely. Okay, so everyone, if you have a piece of paper, take that down, because then you can't say you got nothing from the paper at all. So, now, that felt a bit familiar. Possibly, you know, overly familiar. Do you know? So this is how classrooms have worked. Do you know, the inquisitorial system. Where I say, quick, let's do this. So, what we've done here is that we've actually just now set up a very simple zone of proximal development here in this room. So I could be brash and I could say we've engaged in an experiment, but that's a bit over the top for this level. So what we've done is we've had just a very brief experience ourselves here. So experience then is of this zone of proximal development. Here's why, this is what it's reminiscent of. It's the teacher and this poor guy has a dunce's cap on here. So a lot of us remember that or something close to it. But what's been happening in education is that, especially secondary school teacher training, is that Vygotsky has become very, very, very influential. So we move away from the model whereby each person's... Wait, I'll stick to the script here. So we have experienced the zone of actual development. So some of us already knew what the Heimlich and the unheimlich was, but we got refreshed. But other, in another sense, some of us may have moved into this zone of proximal development, which means that another person here, or a more capable other, has said something, and we can say yes. So let's say that not everyone made a Freudian connection. Let's just say, okay, we probably did, we all Freud. But let's just say that we didn't. So we've moved into this zone of proximal development. Now here we have, write a coherent paragraph. I should hope we can all do that here. Write a 5-page paper and write a novel, which is a good example of what could be beyond the scope of a learner. Beyond the scope of a learner. And probably unfair to ask as well, as a homework assignment. So in any case, in company like this, it's difficult to assert the stock definition of Lev Vygotsky's theory of the zone of proximal development, being that a learner or a group of learners move from a zone in which they have a capacity to learn on their own into a zone just beyond their established capacity, okay, but within their potential capacity, given the appropriate assistance of a more capable peer. So in this group, it's hard to assert that. Because I don't want to start one of those big philosopher fights, you know, like Wittgenstein's poker, where we say, I'm the more capable peer, and you're not. That's the problem. But what I will say is that what we have in this room is a specific group or a subculture of the society as a whole that shares a certain level of specialized knowledge. In this case, of philosophy in general and phenomenology in particular. So as such, this group has the potential to be enhanced by the interaction of the members of the group itself, much more so than by the simple delivery of information from one primary broadcaster to multiple receivers, as it is entailed in what Paulo Freire called the banking model of education. So Freire in the Pedagogy of the Oppressed says there's a banking model, and he essentially argues it's always been there, or it's the conservative model, where the Aristotelian teacher gives talks and the class remembers and repeats. Okay. And that is what we're questioning here with the zone of proximal development. And I could just repeat that very quickly. The potential to be enhanced by the interaction of the members of the group itself, much more so than by the simple delivery of information from one primary broadcaster to multiple receivers. Okay, so that's the basic principle. In Mind and Society, Vygotsky outlines three major theoretical positions on the relation between learning and development that were current in the 1930s, and they are still current now. One, learning is considered an external process, external to development. So it's dependent on, but not involved in development. So that would be sort of Piaget's position. Two, learning is development. So this is the Pavlov's dog theory, that I keep saying it to you, and then you can respond. So it's reflexive, okay. And then some combination of the two. So maturation, becoming older, that was Piaget, is really the originator of age grades, etc. So as you mature, you become more capable, and that capacity then drives maturation. So it's a sort of both together. Now, what Vygotsky says, he says learning and development are interrelated. Sorry, those are the three classical theories. So there's a phenomenological, can you guys see the top of this one here? Phenomenologist trigger warning here. Trigger warnings in college are important. So for Vygotsky, learning and development are interrelated from the child's very first day of life. Development presupposes a specific social nature and a process by which children grow into the intellectual life of those around them. Okay. So, later in this paper, the trigger term for phenomenologists in that summary will be interrogated, so don't shout it out if you see it. For now, we understand that Vygotsky's ZPD, then, is the region between an individual's, one, actual development level, judged only on what can currently be done on their own at a given time of testing, and two, their potential development level in conjunction with a more advanced peer or teacher. Okay. Now, I'll just flesh that out. Vygotsky uses the example of two 10-year-old boys tested at intake for school. Each is found, through traditional testing processes, to have the development level of an 8-year-old. Established theories, established theories at the time of writing would put them both in a remedial class and assign them the work that was supposedly appropriate to a remedial class. So the two 10-year-olds are able to achieve at an 8-year-old level. They're tested on their way into school. I know that in England and Ireland, 10-year-olds wouldn't be going from one school to another, so we could say 12-year-olds if we wanted to, but this is his example. So Vygotsky suggested a further process involving a test as to what each boy, in this case, could achieve under instruction from a teacher. After such a process, one boy shows modest improvement and tests at a 9-year-old level. The other tests at a 12-year-old level. This gap in potential development is what Vygotsky called the zone of proximal development. Okay, so that's his own theory. Now, this paper isn't intended at all simply to outline Vygotsky's concept of the zone of proximal development, as it were, but it's just so as you know what I'm talking about. So testing actual development characterizes mental development retrospectively, while establishing the ZPD can predict capacity for further development. That was his argument. Okay. So our experience at the beginning of the paper should actually illustrate pretty much what I mean by a ZPD. So it's the decentering from the person standing here to the members of the social group at play. So, according to Kozulin, Gindis, Agiev, and Miller, Vygotsky's notion of the zone of proximal development became the most popular Vygotskian concept used in contemporary educational theory. Okay, so this is the ZPD in contemporary educational theory. So, there was three contexts that were laid out, and this is the effect that Vygotsky's theory has had. So there's the developmental context, so it was used to explain emerging cognitive functions in the individual. There's the applied context to explain the difference between capacity and potential or unaided and aided performance. Now that's a big move already. And then as a metaphoric space, I didn't put in these scare quotes here, they were in the original. As a metaphoric space where everyday notions of children meet scientific theories of teachers. So our last one sounds the most phenomenologically flavored, doesn't it? So everyday notions and scientific theories at play with each other. So, those are the three contexts that we usually hear about this in. Now, there's a problem that these contexts and discussion of this ZPD now, in my experience as a teacher training, college, etc., they've gone beyond the most popular Vygotskian concepts and become the most popular concepts in contemporary educational theory, full stop. So there's a drive to use this to decenter the teaching, to have the group do the work, to have the students inform each other and have a social learning process take place, which is good. In practice, that is good. But for us here, this ZPD and what I'm talking about there, it could be considered chatter, right? And when something becomes very popular and all-embracing, it can be considered chatter. So what was the trigger term for phenomenologists in the Vygotsky summary? Possibly more chatter there, trigger term. When I put up the slide that had the trigger term, the trigger warning, what was it? So I think it was presupposes. Okay, for Vygotsky, learning and development are interrelated from a child's very first day of life. Development presupposes a specific social nature and a process by which children grow into the intellectual life of those around them. So for me, as I read this, I'm learning it for practice, but I've already studied philosophy for a long time and looked at space, spatiality, spatial relations. And this ZPD is being treated in the three ways we've just seen. Okay, those are the three major concepts. So presupposes is the problem here. The first move in phenomenological description is to bracket presuppositions, as we all know. And it is for that reason that I propose here that a foundational phenomenological context should be established for the ZPD concept itself. So a foundational phenomenological concept could be established. In short, an examination of the lived context grounded upon a description of concrete spatial relations. The lived context grounded upon a description of concrete spatial relations. So why do we need that? And I'll be very quick now. Vygotsky, like many Marxist theorists, examined concrete labor situations directly and could have made the leap to a similar examination of learning situations. He could have, but he didn't. But even had he done so, he was influenced by political theory. Okay? So in his 1934 paper, Fascism in Psychoneurology, Vygotsky overtly conceived of himself as being engaged in the class struggle in science in general and in the field of phenomenology in particular, in the field of psychology in particular. So he self-identified as being involved in the class struggle, science in general, psychology in particular. Okay. Now, he overtly conceived of himself as being involved in that struggle. In The Socialist Alteration of Man, another essay, you don't get titles of essays like that anymore, do you? Fascism in Psychoneurology, that's one of my favorite. He revealed his underlying thesis, so he reveals his underlying thesis by quoting Marx's assertion, only in community with others has each individual the means of cultivating his gifts in all directions. Now, phenomenological description avoids what Sartre called, and we heard this earlier, putting the cart before the horse. And specifically where that phrase is used by Sartre in Being and Nothingness is in terms of psychoanalytical theories. So he says psychoanalytical theories are prone to put the cart before the horse. Whether these theories be Freudian libido, Adlerian will to power, or as I'm saying here, Vygotskian socialism. Okay, so though Sartre himself struggled, well, that's an aside, he struggled with that himself a bit, didn't he, Sartre, the relationship between Marxism and existentialism. Based on observations of classrooms and educational settings, in practice, one key element should be added to Vygotsky's concept of the zone of proximal development. If a phenomenological approach after the existentialist fashion is applied, a shift should take place through which we understand the zone of proximal development not only, and these are the three things we've seen, as a region within the scope of given learners' potential cognitive development, nor just as a theory underpinning a more socially constructivist model of education, but also and fundamentally as a touchstone phrase for bringing forth an awareness of space and spatiality in the process of learning. So, the actual space of any given classroom or learning environment deserves as much attention from a contemporary academic or teacher as this inkpot, or that chair, or this table, or the classic one, this sheet of white paper. So we apply the phenomenological reduction in this way, okay? Because the classroom is, after all, where learning takes place. So you see what I did there, I actually put the name of the paper in the paper, which is, that's always a good thing to do. I'll let that one sink in, it's obvious. It went over some of your heads. The classroom, as with space in general, is often ignored or overlooked theoretically and treated only implementally in terms of the best use of space. So it's often overlooked. That's what phenomenology is best for, to see that which isn't seen, to look at the always already. Or as I said, the very familiar. Okay, time's up. Did I get all my jokes in? Oh yeah, my end point is that phenomenological investigation gives us the tools to return to this situation itself and recognize that the construction and disposition of learning spaces and bodies within them is primarily a concrete, it's the primary concrete manifestation of this zone of proximal development, upon which our theoretical constructions, whether they be cognitive constructivist or Marxist, must be grounded. So why? I know someone will ask me that. Why? I say it's because space, along with time, is one of the two prime existential categories as close to foundational as we are going to get. So just to finish, we can push this simple and naive idea as far as we want. Okay, and that's it.